Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Mo H., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from Walnut Creek, California. And today is Tuesday, July 13th. This is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are in Chapter 5, How It Works. We're on page 70, it's the second paragraph down, the middle of the page, to sum up about sex. We'll be studying that one paragraph only. And today's readers are the 12 Steps, Liz T., the 12 Traditions, Laura R., and the readers of the text are Dana P., Leslie M., and Liz, again, is our backup person. The share ID for Monday, July 12th at the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 17,335. That's 17,335. And for this morning's meeting today, Tuesday, July 13th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 17,343. That's 17,342. Did I say 343? I meant 342. 17,342. The newcomer greeter is Lois P., and our announcements person is Robin P. Got the P's there. Okay, OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Liz T. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning, Mo. Thanks so much for your service. Good morning, everyone. My name is Liz T. I'm a recovered, grateful, and recovered compulsive overeater in Minnesota. The 12 steps. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
And thank you very much, Liz T. And I will now ask Laura R. to read our 12 traditions. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you so much. This is Laura R., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Colorado. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us of these principles before personalities. Thanks.
And thank you, Laura R., for your service. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are in the chapter How It Works on page 70, the second paragraph down in the middle of the page, and it starts out with "to sum up about sex." And I am now going to ask Dana P. to read and comment on that paragraph. Good morning, Dana.
Good morning. Thank you, Mo, for your service. Dana P. here. I'm in California, compulsive overeater, anorexic bulimic. To sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge. When we yield, would mean heartache. Wow. So I'm glad we're summing this up. Talking about sex and this earnest prayer. The earnest prayer, I love that. With sincere and intense conviction, seriously. Some of the other words they say is soberly, gravely, sincerely, intently, resolutely. We take this very serious. I took this very serious, and it needs to be serious. For me, sex was about what I could get, and I used that. A friend of mine, she talked about this, the V power. She said, use your V power. Well, we're talking about the women's secret place, that V power. Use your V power. And it is a power. It is a power that is driven by instinct, which is, animals. We're talking about animals. And I learned very young that I could get what I wanted by using that quote-unquote power. But it brought me nothing but heartache, as it says here. And it got to where, I really enjoyed it. Not only could I use it for, to get what I wanted, but I could use it for pleasure, and I could use it to get away from my feelings and or feel more intensely when I wasn't feeling. So it got really complicated for me. And it talks about, I love the part where it says here, if sex is very troublesome. We throw ourselves the harder into helping others. And what that meant for me was to leave it alone. You know, I think about, you know, nuns and monks and how they go get cloistered and they don't, you know, it's like they put that aside, you know, set that aside, that the sexual act completely and put myself more intensely into helping others. And you know, I was just helping myself. But the most powerful thing about this paragraph is that, you know, we can talk and talk and talk about sex, but it's not really about sex. It's about our relationships, or for me, it's about my relationships. So my ideals are relationship ideals. You know, how would God have me be in every single relationship in my life, not just sex relationships? So I look at that every single day and every single relationship I have, and I just ask God, you know, how would you have me be today in this relationship? Because relationships grow, and for me, they've always been very superficial. And as I continue to ask God for direction and guidance, I discover that my relationships become deeper and deeper and more intimate, and that relationship starts with my higher power. I have an intimate relationship with my beloved master now who lives in me, and that is the ultimate relationship. So with that, I'm happy to hear what other people have to say, and I will pass.
Well, thank you, Dana P., for getting us started, and your timing was absolutely perfect. Let me remind everybody where we're at. We're in Chapter 5, How It Works. We're on page 70, the second paragraph in the middle of the page, to sum up about sex. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who would like to share on this paragraph?
Virginia T.
Virginia T.
Nadia B.
Nadia B.
Donna B.
Yes.
Okay, let me see. Who did I hear Donna?
Yes.
Yeah, I heard Donna. A.
Jody
A.
E.
Okay.
And Deb E.
Jody E. and Deb E. Dev E. Dev, D-E-V. All right, I think we'll stop with that group. We have Virginia T., Nadia B., Donna B., Jody E., and Dev E. All right. Virginia T., you're up first. Good morning, Virginia.
Good morning. This is Virginia T. I'm grateful for recovery here in Georgia, and I'm thankful for all of your service and for this meeting. I have learned in this area of my life to put my motivations to a test from my higher power by looking at whether it passes the love test. Am I motivated in my actions? Do I show patience and kindness? I should not show jealousy. I shouldn't be bragging or arrogant. I shouldn't be rude or seeking my own advantage. I'm not irritable, and I don't keep a record of complaints. If it follows that test, then I know it's properly motivated. But often there's something about sexual behavior that brings out just the opposite of what real love should be. So that has been an important way to test my motivation. I've also found that what I have done in my compulsive overeating behavior is to hide myself. Have you ever heard an alcoholic say that a certain drink was better than sex? How many times have we said that a certain enticing food is better than sex? I think sometimes I have turned to food to fill my needs and actually find that sort of pleasure. I also have used being a few pounds overweight and looking at myself and finding myself unappealing in my body image, and just imagine that my husband would find me unappealing as well, and sort of hiding from him, and in that way, because I'm feeling unappealing. So, you know, in this inventory, I need to acknowledge those things and really repent of them, and be honest and be just know that I can't hide behind my overeating, and that I need to be free of all these unhealthy body image issues as well. Thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Virginia T. from Georgia. We have now Nadia B., followed by Donna B. Good morning, Nadia.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. This is Nadia B., gratefully recovered compulsive overeater in Connecticut. I loved the shares today, and what really stuck out to me today here is that, you know, I do really take this book literally as a prescription for me for survival. I have a deadly illness, and this is not just, you know, for sobriety. I have to live this. And so what I'm learning from this and being here with you guys for a few years is that I do have sometimes an imperious urge. And, you know, this is a prescription for me. When yield means heartache, when I give way to arguments and pressure and my anger and my frustration with life, you know, it causes me and everybody around me heartache, hurt. I hurt everyone around me, including myself, you know, as I was killing myself with food and all kinds of stuff. So what do I do when sex is troublesome, when my relationships are troublesome? And I don't know any human being that doesn't have a relationship, including me, that, you know, sex-related troublesome relationship. So it tells me to pray. To pray for the right ideal, for guidance. It tells me to pray for sanity. It doesn't tell me to pray for their sanity, for, in my case, my husband's sanity, for his guidance, for his ideals, whatever that is. It tells me to pray for mine. And it also tells me that, you know, in order for me to be able to survive this pressure of this imperious urge, I must, you know, pray for the guidance in how I may be helpful today. How may I be helpful to others? Meaning maybe to my sponsee today or even to my family, how I can be helpful to them. And you guys, you know, I don't want to pray for my husband when we're arguing or when he says something that I disagree with or that pisses me off. But what choice do I have today? You know, I am an addict, still am today. I have certain, you know, mindset that really tells me that I am right. And trust me, guys, I have no way to counteract it without this specific directions of 12 steps on how to survive this human mind. And I'm just so grateful to be here with you guys and learning how to survive this condition, this deadly disease that I have. Thank God for 12 steps. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Nadia B. And from Connecticut. Next up, we have Donna B., followed by Jody E. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning, Mo. This is Donna B. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic calling from Denver. I do spell my name D-A-N-A. You know, I have a very challenging relationship with my mom. The imperious urge for me is that I want to, quote unquote, make her happy. I want to feel the release, the emotional release of her being happy with me, content with me, not disappointed with me. And because of her own illness, she is often disappointed with me. And I can feel it. No matter where she is, no matter where I am, it's like this radar. And it's shockingly accurate. You know, we talk a lot about delusion in this disease. But the truth is, when I have this radar feeling that my mom is upset or disappointed with me, it's often true. And just like I developed a strategy with the food for some immediate relief, I've developed strategies to relieve myself of the horrible feeling that comes with knowing my mom is disappointed in me. And that usually means I call her and give her every single detail of my life, or I invite my parents over, or I plan a party, or I throw my kids at them, or, you know, just anything to engage them, anything at all. And that urge is powerful. I'm in my inventory, I'm coming to see just how powerful that urge is. Just how terrified I am of being abandoned by my mother. And it doesn't help me when I call. And it doesn't help me when I invite. And it doesn't help me when I use my kids as a way to create a connection with her. I thank God, because of the pause, I can identify that urge when it's rising within me. And I am starting to make, so slowly, a different choice, not to pick up the phone to call my mom, but to go on the OA Moms board and post, "I'm available. Can I be of service? Please, someone call me. Let me think about someone other than myself." And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Donna B. from Colorado. And next up, we have Jody E., followed by Dev E., and after Dev, I'll take another line up. Just reminding everybody, we're on page 70, the second paragraph, to sum up about sex. And good morning, Jody.
Good morning, Mo. Good morning, everyone. This is Jody E., gratefully recovering in California. Thank you all for being here. So this prayer for the right ideal, the earnest prayer, is a wonderful prayer that I forget about. So I'm glad to be reminded of it today. I can earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, whether it's sex-related or not, for sanity and for the strength to do the right thing. That's a wonderful prayer to use in most any situation in my life. And I'm going to use it today. If sex is very troublesome or any other problem, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge. The urge of lust, or the urge to eat compulsively, the urge to shop compulsively, the urge to let rest on my laurels, when to yield would mean heartache. So this theme comes again and again in the big book. To me, this is the real solution to my problem. To recover, to take my own inventory, to make my amends, and then to turn my attention to others. That is the spiritual solution. I can manage my food. I can manage my finances. I can manage my sex life myself, or I can let God manage it. I can let God change me through selfless service to others. There's a big difference there. Am I going to manage my life, or am I going to let God work through me to be of service to others so that I can be changed? I can become a different person with different motives, with different responses to life. That's the solution that I'm looking for today. So God help me. Earnestly, I pray for the willingness to be your servant today. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Jody E. And Jody's from California. Dev E is up next. And after Dev, we'll be taking some more names. Good morning, Dev.
Hi. Thanks. This is Dev E., recovered compulsive overeater in Israel. And my first thought in this paragraph was that it's a good reminder, not just about sex, but in general in my recovery, to remember that I need to pray for guidance every day in everything I do, really, and that I need to throw myself into service and helping others every day also, especially when I get too self-absorbed in my character defects. And then the word earnestly caught my attention, so I looked it up, and it says, with sincere and intense conviction, seriously. And so it's another reminder of this is serious stuff. Like, this isn't just like an afterthought at the end of the inventory. Like, I focus on my resentments and my fears, and then, oh yeah, I kind of have to look at my sex inventory too. It's given equal weight. You know, there are three parts of the inventory. And, you know, sometimes I think to myself, oh, well, there's a whole other program for that. So why did they include it in the big book, which we use in, you know, multiple different addictions, for multiple different addictions? And it's because as an addict, I need to look out for, you know, what my sex behavior is. And a couple of years ago, I kept journals from the age of 8 until 23, and I reread all of them. I did this extremely comprehensive sex inventory because it was really important for me to look at everything. What I included in it was even just like all the like crushes and obsessions I had over boys, even if I never even like held their hand. I included that because I saw the same pattern, the same behavior, and the same obsession. And my diary entries would vacillate between negative comments about my body and how much I had to lose weight and how I needed to like fix my skin and all these things. Vacillate between that and like whatever boy I was obsessed with. And it really made me aware of how much of a part of my addiction that was, like how my mind can get obsessed with my body and my mind can get obsessed with boys and, you know, and for me, that really kind of brought it closer to home and go, okay, this is a really important part of the fourth step inventory. It's not just I should focus more attention on my fears and my resentments, but it is really something to look at, even if I'm not in, you know, a separate program for it, even if the only program I'm in is Overeaters Anonymous, it still has something to do with this addiction. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
And thank you, Debbie, from Israel. Let me remind everybody again, we're in Chapter 5, How It Works. We're on page 70, in the middle of the page, the second paragraph, to sum up about sex. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who would like to share on this paragraph?
Carol G.
Carol G.
Elaine S.
Elaine S.
Victoria T.
Victoria P.
Hannah B.
T.
Hannah B. Anyone else?
Alexis F.
Alexis F. All right, we'll stop there. I have, oh, who was that? Okay. Carol G, Elaine S, Victoria T, Hannah B, and Alexis F. All right, everyone else please mute except Carol G and tell us what state you're from.
Hi, thank you very much, Mo. I'm in Illinois. And when I first heard that sentence to sum up about sex, there was a part of me that was like, phew, thank goodness. It's something else. I mean, when you read the book yourself or with your sponsor, you don't realize how long it can go on, except for when you read one paragraph at a time. So this has been like a week. And throughout this week, I haven't been on every day. Sometimes I go to the earlier meeting. Sometimes I just can't go on. But I've had this feeling, talk, say something, and I keep pushing it down. So finally today, it's like they're summing up, you better say something. So I just think for myself, and I know a lot of people in program that I've talked to, that we've had sexual abuse in our life, and it's such a private thing that it's like really difficult to talk about. And I know for myself that my compulsive eating didn't really kick in until after my sexual abuse in high school. And because of that, it colored all my sex relations from then on. It's like, just like my reality changed through a psychic change and program, my reality changed right after that trauma. And it's been healed through therapy and coming to this program. And I'm at a time in my life now where I'm like older and sex isn't really that important to me anymore. However, it still is to my husband sometimes. And sometimes I'm like, God, please help me. I don't want to do this. I'm not into it. Let me think of him. And I pray about it. And it always works, just like everything else, when I pray to God to help me to think of somebody else and to try to do something to make someone else enjoy themselves. So all I could say is, it's wonderful to be able to be here to talk about this and to just know that we're all getting healed and becoming who we really are in spite of all the trauma that may have happened. So thanks for listening, and I pass.
Well, thank you, Carol G. from Illinois. Next up, Elaine S., and followed by Victoria T. Good morning, Elaine. Elaine, can't hear you. Press star one.
Hi, Mo. I thought there was one person ahead of me. I'm so sorry. This is Elaine
no
S.
problem.
From Santa Barbara, California. And Mo, it's wonderful to hear your voice this morning. And it's interesting because when we started reading the section in the big book, I had been sometimes tuning in and sometimes not. But all of a sudden, God woke me up every morning. Just before 7 o'clock to tune in. And I thought, well, this topic is not really relevant to me because I'm in a very happy long-term relationship. I've been married to my husband for 30 years. He's always had the ideal, you know, the right ideal for a relationship, and it, you know, and it brushed off on me. Whereas before I, you know, I had been single for many years and was in and out of relationships. And now I was happy to be in this relationship. I wasn't interested. So this section, whenever I've done the an inventory, I've skipped over this because I felt it didn't have anything to do with me. I felt that the other, the resentment inventory and fear inventory sort of covered everything. But what I'm realizing and what God is sort of, I think, directing me to is really that really all the steps are about an ideal, and that this section, as any section, applies really to all of us, particularly as people have said, around friendships. And it's so easy to feel, to just look at the resentment inventory and fear inventory and feel that it covers everything. But it was so brilliant, I think, of Bill Wilson to include this section, and really for everybody to sort of double check, you know, is our relationships with friends, with anybody that we're relating to, are they of service? Are they gentle? Are they kind? You know, are we serving God and modeling, you know, proper relationships and not taking other people's inventory, which is something I did the other day. One of my friends said something, and I said, "You're being kind of judgmental, aren't you?" And it was like, and I realized later, well, I was kind of being judgmental by saying that to her. And there's a constant learning, and it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. And I just wanted to share that. Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here today. With that, I pass.
Well, thank you, Elaine S. from California. I'm glad you've been waking up every morning before 7. Victoria T., I got you up next. Let us know where you're from. And you'll be followed by Hannah B.
Good morning. Good morning, Victoria. This is Victoria T. I'm in Texas. I'm a compulsive eater, and this is the first time I've shared on this meeting in years. I'm coming back to this program after having tried everything and nothing. Nothing solves the spiritual problem, the spiritual malady, like the 12 steps. When we started reading now about sex, I thought, I've done my inventory on this. I don't have a problem with sex. I'm not in a relationship. And I had this huge revelation. Food was more important to me than sex, has been ever since I was a teenager. The relief I got from binging and purging was so much better than having a relationship with another person. And I am struggling with food sobriety, as I always have. I restrict, I undereat, I overexercise, I'm afraid of losing control, and I can't live like this anymore. And I know that the solution is in the 12 steps, and I know that the solution is having a fellowship of others that have had the same struggles and live the same solution. So that's why I'm speaking up, and I am taking these words to heart, praying for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity and the strength to do the right thing. That's why I've been coming to the meetings. That's why I made a first phone call yesterday, and that's why I'm speaking today. Thanks for letting me share.
Well, thank you, Victoria T., and welcome from Texas. Glad to have you back. Hannah B., let me know where you're from. You're up next, followed by Alexis F.
Hi, Hannah B., recovered compulsive overeater. Thank you so much for everybody's shares and the lead, and I'm so grateful to be a part of this group. I feel like I've really found my people in this group, and I was in another 12-step program for 18 years before I got here, and I never felt a part of, even though I identified there. And I'm always so profoundly just humbled and grounded in these meetings. So deepest of gratitude. This chapter or this paragraph really says so much, and it's so powerful because, you know, like it says, we all have sex problems, and there's such a vast range of what those problems look like, and it's so deeply ingrained and embedded into our lives, even when we don't realize it, you know. And, you know, for me, first of all, you know, I pray for the right ideal, so it's not like I'm not choosing what my ideal is necessarily. I'm praying for it, and I'm being open to direction. If I knew what the right ideal was, then I wouldn't be in the situation where I
desperately needed an overhauling in this area. And God has really been able to shape and guide this, you know, in my marriage and in my life as I've gone. And it started off as one thing, and I've really had to see that, like, this is not an area that I can leave God out of. If I do not include God in this area, then it starts to kind of disintegrate for me. And my stuff comes up in this area, with my husband, and it can be troublesome. As far as when it is, throwing myself into service is really powerful, but then there's also this balance, you know, within my ideal of, you know, for me anyways, I've found the balance of like what service can look like in that area specifically. And then also honesty and then just the thing that has probably been the most transformative for me is really, really where I've had resistance or challenge in this area is really welcoming God in and saying, God, please direct this. This is not an area that we should be ashamed of leaving God out of. And I think sometimes there's this belief that like, you know, sex is tainted, you know, in some way, and it's, you know, maybe it's shameful or whatever. And so to really welcome God in has always been for me the most profoundly transformative thing. And I'm always just so grateful and so blown away, because like it says, our sex powers are God given and therefore good. And so, you know, this is a gift. Thank you for listening.
Well, thank you, Hannah B. from Tennessee. And before I take Alexis F., I'll let you know where we're at. We're in Chapter 5, How It Works. We're on page 70, the second paragraph, just that one paragraph only, to sum up about sex. And after Alexis, I can take a few more. Good morning, Alexis.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you. My sexual conduct and my sexual desires branch into my personality and my spirit. And they're equal to my compulsive overeating. Somewhere along the way, I crossed over the line from being a normal eater. And I don't know when that was. It could have been before I was born, or it could have been as a young child. As a young baby, that's up to God to decide exactly when it was. And I'm always amazed when people say it happened at this point in my life. There are certain things that I'm pretty sure of that I'm not exactly sure of. But I do know that there were certain events in my life that affected my sexuality. And became an overdrive because of something that happened in my past or something that was in me. Could be both, a combination of both. Sexual drive is a part of human nature. So it's probably a combination of both. I know I'm a compulsive overeater now. There's nothing that I can do about it. I know that I have sexual problems. I have addictions. I have compulsions. I have a personality disorder. And there's nothing that I can do about it. I don't know whether they're God-given or they're man-made. They probably are man-made because God made us all as perfectly as he wanted us to be. And in his eyes, we're all perfect. So, the disease was probably man-made. And because of that, it's important to look back on my experiences. It's important to look back on my conduct. What drove me to OA was my sex drive. I was in a marriage, and outside of the marriage, I was having thoughts and actions with another man, not in the act of sex itself, but in offering myself to another man. And because of that,
time. Alexis?
Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Alexis, very much for your share. All right. So we're on page 70, the second paragraph, to sum up about sex. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. And I have time for two more shares.
Sandy A.
Anyone else?
Marie M.
All right, let's do that. Sandy A and Marie M. Sandy, you're up. Let us know where you're from.
This is Sandy A. I'm from Ohio, southeastern Ohio. And this is, this topic's very difficult for me. It's very dear and near to me because, well, probably for the same reasons for everybody else, but, you know, I was sexually abused by my brother as a child, and I wasn't touched appropriately by anyone else. I mean, I, you know, my older siblings and my parents hugged me as a child, but it seemed like once I reached the age, certain age, like 8, we no longer did that. But I was touched inappropriately. I look back on that now, and I started eating to kind of push people away and keep people at bay. And it wasn't only through therapy and the OA program that I began to realize that I needed to talk about this and be open about it. And I can't heal that until I do. It was a lot of guilt, a lot of embarrassment, a lot of shame, a lot of blame that I carried around with me all my life, but I'm letting that go. And I've been able to make amends, some amends with my brother who sexually abused me, but that has also carried into my adulthood and has affected me intimately, not just sex, but just being intimate with people. I'm afraid to be vulnerable with people. I have trust issues. And so, and I don't know that my parents ever knew he was sexually abusing me. I know they knew he was sexually abusing my sister, but not necessarily me. And that is a biggie when it comes to being sexually abused, about whether your parents will even know that, or even if they know that, if they will even believe that and support you and take up for you. So those are things that wasn't my fault. I'm not to blame for it, but it is things I have to deal with. And the OA program has helped me with that. And, you know, I pray about it. I do steps work with that. I still continue to do step work with that. And so I look forward to the day when I can be more at peace with it. I'm more at peace with it than I used to be, but I want to be more at peace with it than I am. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy A. And Marie M., I have about 2 minutes for you. Okay, Marie?
Great. Thank you. And thank you for your service. I am so grateful for
Marie,
this.
Where are you from?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm from D.C.
Okay. Thank you.
So grateful for the meeting, these past several meetings where we've really looked at this topic in depth. To sum up about sex, I think for me, one of the things that came out of being at this meeting every day and going through these paragraphs is that I had an emotional relationship with someone outside my first marriage, and I never really addressed it because I was thinking that sex meant physical only. But I've learned so much about these words extending beyond beyond physical ideal, and so I know that I need to make an amends to my first husband, and I'm grateful that I'm able to do so. But in my marriage that I have today, which I'm so grateful for, we are extremely honest with each other. And we always, if it's something that's going to be hard for the other person to take, we always start with no consequences before we talk. But what I am latching onto as lessons learned in this series that we've just been through is that I have to be honest, and sometimes it's painful. Sometimes I don't want to, and I just don't want to, but I have to pray for the willingness and do it, because that is what my right ideal is, that my husband get my honesty, he get my support, and that he gets my consideration. So I'm just grateful for all the shares that we've had in the past couple weeks and how much I've learned. And with that, I'll pass.
And what's the first initial of your last name, Marie?
Oh, it's M.
Marie M. Okay, thank you very much. And you will be our last share for today. Thank you all who gave service on this meeting and all those who attended and all those who shared. Much appreciated. So we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164. Followed by the Serenity Prayer. And I am going to ask Leslie M. to, is that right?
Good morning.
Yes. Thank you.
Good morning, yes. Mo H. Thank you for your service. I am Leslie M. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Long Island, New York. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.